Hi, I'm Adam Berkmans, and today we're making venison neck goulash. This recipe was created by Natalie Auer, a field staff writer for Harvesting Nature. She writes, "When I started planning for this recipe, I decided that I wanted to try and use a part of the deer that I hadn't used before. This year, we sent my husband's buck to the butcher, and we were given back these lovely cuts of neck meat. I knew I wanted to use them at some point for a stew or a pot roast, and this venison neck goulash recipe was a perfect time to try it. The neck is full of connective tissue and muscles, and when it's braised gently, it melts into this wonderful tender bite. I hope you love it." Thanks, Natalie. The world of goulash is actually quite interesting. Different versions abound, and a goulash in the United States has almost no resemblance whatsoever to a goulash from Hungary or from the rest of Europe. How did this happen? Why is this dish so ubiquitous across much of the world? Well, let's dig into it. I mentioned Hungary in the last sentence, and that's where we're going to start delving into goulash's history. It all started on the Elföld, or the Great Hungarian Plains, a flat, steppe-like territory occupying over 54% of Hungary, and reaching into Ukraine, Serbia, Slovakia, and Romania. Throughout history, this Great Plain offered no real natural barriers, and so was a playground for passing armies like the Huns, the Mongols, and the Turks, who all left an indelible impression on the food and culture of the region. Way back in the 800s, the Elföld was also populated by cowherds, groups of men who had herded cattle across the plains. Working in small groups of five or six, they would ride their small, hardy horses, herding longhorn cattle with cattle dogs and a small horse-drawn cart or wagon in tow. These cow herds were known as guyas. In the evening, they would set up a metal cauldron over the fire and cook a simple and filling stew, which usually consisted of dried bacon, wild onions, a rustic grain like millet, wild caraway, salt, and lots of pepper. If one of the steers happened to get injured and had to be put down, then the guyas would dry out the meat, store it in bags made of the stomach, and add it to the stew until it was gone. Is this starting to sound familiar to you? Rough men, out on the plains, herding longhorn cattle, pulling along a small wagon, eating spicy stews cooked over the fire. They even had wide-brimmed hats and high boots, if an artist's illustrations of them can be believed. Turns out American cowboy culture existed 1,000 years before anyone realized. These Hungarian cowboys would eventually end up in towns and villages to trade or sell their livestock, and the simple stew that they ate slowly caught on with the villagers. The dish became more and more popular, and it was eventually named after the herdsman who had introduced it, goulash. Anglicized, that's goulash. It would kind of be like if we called Texas chili cowboy. It's actually not too late to make that change. I think cowboy is a much more fun name for the dish. The goulash dish began to spread around the plains, becoming popular in every cattle market town, and then eventually making its way all the way to cities like Venice, Prague, and Vienna. Since it was a simple dish, which could be easily altered to suit what ingredients you happen to have on hand, locals could easily adopt it to suit to their own taste or the ingredients they had available to them. Since the area also played host to several different religions, the dish could easily be altered to suit religious needs, meaning that it was a dish enjoyed by everyone, Jews, Muslims, Roman Catholics, and Orthodox Catholics, which could be quite rare at the time. As farms and homesteads began to intrude on the outskirts of the plains, the dish became to be associated with rural farmers and common folk, hardy food for hardy people. The goulash culture began to be hemmed in or pushed out, and the dish of goulash became the food of the common farmer rather than the herder. Transatlantic voyages in the late 1400s and early 1500s brought a whole new suite of plants back to the old world, including one particular plant that would change goulash forever, the chili. Chilies were brought into Spain, traveled quickly through North Africa, into Italy and the Balkans, and then were finally brought up into what is now Hungary during Ottoman rule. Chilies were being grown in Budapest by the Ottomans as early as 1569, and some enterprising soul realized that they could be dried out and turned into a powder. This spicy powder was called paprika, and would forever after alter the flavor of food in the area, starting of course with goulash, the everyman's dish. Hot paprika replaced pepper as the main spice in the dish, and there are travelers' accounts claiming that the red dish of goulash was hearty with spice that warmed the belly. This spicy form of goulash remained extremely popular with the common people and took on a form very similar to what we know as Hungarian goulash today. The dish had also spread to neighboring countries following the cattle trade, and each had its own unique take on the dish. Italy, Czechia, Germany, Slovakia, the Netherlands, Slovenia, Serbia, Croatia, Austria, Poland, and Albania all had their own versions of goulash, all eaten by the common people, while the wealthy nobles enjoyed fancier French and German contemporary cooking. When the Austrian Empire, run by the Habsburg monarchy, replaced the Ottoman Empire in the early 1800s, nationalistic fever swept through Hungary, with citizens promoting the touchstones of Hungarian culture. The language, the land, the folktales, songs, poems, the peasant culture, and of course, goulash, the food of the common people. Where the rich wouldn't have touched the stuff in the 1700s, the 1800s saw nobles, wealthy merchants, and urbanites welcoming goulash into their kitchens and eating it just like the common people. Confusingly, the dish came to be known as perkolt in Hungary while remaining goulash outside of the country. New dishes like paprikash and other close cousins to goulash also became popular around this time. By the 1900s, the Elfland Plains had mostly been turned into farmland and fresh produce was bountiful. Tomatoes and potatoes sometimes came to be added to the dish because of this, and new varieties of chilies and peppers and milling techniques made for new styles of paprika that were more mild and more flavorful. By this time, the dish was most often served with thickly sliced dumplings or egg noodles and had become the national dish of Hungary. Many variations appeared, including goulash with sauerkraut, smoked beef, red wine, different noodles, and with sour cream. The mid-1800s and early 1900s also saw an influx of Hungarian immigrants to Canada and the United States. Like all immigrants, they brought with them recipes from home, which they attempted to recreate using whatever local ingredients were available. As I talked about in an earlier podcast about Italian food in America, the Hungarian immigrants were also introduced to much cheaper meat and cheese, meaning their dishes often became much richer than they would have been back home, where meat and cheese often acted more as a garnish or flavoring than a main ingredient. The history of goulash in America is a bit murky, but there was obviously something strange that happened. The recipe became extremely popular across North America, but started out as something not even recognizable as goulash. The first known recipe for goulash, which quickly took on the anglicized name goulash, was in a 1909 newspaper in California. The American goulash recipe called for sirloin steak, carrots, celery, onion, tomatoes, and rice. No paprika, no real connection to goulash at all, other than that it was a form of beef stew. Several recipes for goulash spread to the newspapers around the United States and even Mexico later that year, calling for ground beef, onions, potatoes, salt, pepper, and spaghetti. Once again, no paprika. The dish was quickly becoming popular, but still had no resemblance to the goulash of Europe. By 1914, the Women's Educational Club cookbook had come out, including two recipes for goulash, one American goulash and the other simply goulash. In only a few years, goulash had already split into two distinct dishes, one American and one European. This cookbook's version of the American goulash called for cubed round steak, stewed with tomatoes, Tabasco sauce, paprika, and onion juice. Around that same time, recipes for American chop suey began appearing, an American take on the Chinese dish with little or no resemblance to the original. Oddly enough, the recipe was very close to American goulash, using ground beef, tomatoes, chili powder, and macaroni. Newspapers continued to come out with American goulash and American chop suey recipes, and in the next decade, the two dishes kind of merged into one, an all-American dish of ground beef, tomatoes, macaroni, and chili powder or paprika. Over the years, the dish acquired several different names, often pointing to catch-all dishes from other cultures. People across North America enjoy a ground beef and macaroni dish with tomatoes and some sort of chili or paprika powder, but they can't quite agree on a name. Goulash, American goulash, chop suey, American chop suey, beefaroni, cheeseburger macaroni, hamburger helper, Johnny Marzetti, and Slumgullion are just a few examples. My favorite are the last two, as the names are so different and interesting. Johnny Marzetti was originally a dish of ground beef, macaroni, tomatoes, and cheese baked into a casserole. It originated in an Italian restaurant in Ohio made by an Italian immigrant named Teresa Marzetti. She named the dish after her brother-in-law. Oddly, the dish came to be quite popular in Panama, brought over by Americans when they ran the Panama Canal Zone before the 1970s. My other favorite term for the dish is slumgullion, said to derive from the Scottish portmanteau of slime and gullion, and pointing to a swamp or a cesspool. It's thought that the first food item called this was a watery beverage like weak tea. The term was originally used to describe the red slurry produced by processing whales, and then for red muddy deposits in mining sluices. So people who call their goulash dish slumgullion do so because it resembles a slurry of whale guts and mining runoff. Yum. I'd love to hear what you guys call this dish. Please reach out by email or social media and let me know. It seems that everyone has a different name for it. Today, American goulash is enjoyed by a huge amount of people of different cultures in Canada, the US, and Mexico, and Hungarian goulash is enjoyed by people all over Europe. This simple dish with humble origins really made its way around. I love how the story of goulash mirrors that of Texas chili in so many ways. The cowboys, the chuck wagon, the Dutch oven, the longhorn cattle, the evolution of the spice profile, its ties to nationalism, its spread to new regions, how the dish changed to the point where it's almost unrecognizable in faraway places, and even to arguments on what makes a true chili or goulash. No beans, no potatoes. I find this stuff so cool. Everyone's got a different version of goulash, whether the American or the European variety, but I suggest trying Natalie's version, which is made rich with the addition of venison neck and red wine. It also has caraway seeds, a nod to the original goulash of the Elfeld. This recipe serves 8 people and takes about 4 hours to make. Ingredients: 2 pounds venison neck meat cubed into 1-inch pieces. Beef chuck can also be used. 1 teaspoon of olive oil. 1 teaspoon of butter. 1.5 pounds of onions, chopped. 1 green bell pepper, chopped. 3 tablespoons of tomato paste. 4 garlic cloves, minced. 1 teaspoon of coarse salt. 1 teaspoon of black pepper. 2 tablespoons of smoked paprika. 2 teaspoons of dried marjoram. 1 teaspoon of caraway seeds. 3 cups of tomato, seeded and chopped. 2 cups of bone broth. Natalie uses homemade bone broth made from venison shank, but beef will work as well. 1 cup dried red wine. 1/2 cup sour cream. To make it: warm a large pot over high heat, coat with olive oil. Brown venison in batches and set aside. Turn heat down to medium heat. Add butter to pot. Be sure to scrape all the remaining caramelized bits of meat from the bottom of the pot. This will be the base of our sauce. Add the onion and bell pepper. Cook until fragrant and tender, about 5 minutes. Add tomato paste and garlic and stir. Add salt, pepper, paprika, marjoram, and caraway seeds. Stir. Add bone broth and wine. Stir until combined. Lower heat to simmer and cover. Cook for 3.5 to 4 hours, or until meat is tender. Stir in sour cream at the last hour. Serve over warm buttered egg noodles or rice. Enjoy. For more great wild fish and game recipes, be sure to subscribe and follow Harvesting Nature's Wild Fish and Game podcast.